Welcome to the Power Hour. I'm Adrienne Herbert, wellness coach, international speaker, and author. Each week, I speak to a variety of guests, from business founders to Olympic athletes, leading coaches, change makers, and innovators, to find out their daily habits, their rules to live by, and what motivates them to get up out of bed each day. Personally, I am on a mission to encourage, motivate, and inspire, so I hope that the Power Hour will help you to achieve your personal and professional goals. Welcome back to the Power Hour podcast. Today, I'm joined by two guests, Mo Gaudat and Alice Law. And in today's episode, we're going to be talking about an important topic that impacts all of us at times, and that topic is stress. I've worked in the wellbeing industry for the last 12 years, and as many of you listeners of this podcast will know, I have seen a lot of changes throughout that time. So in some ways, we might assume that now, living in the modern world, many of us are gaining more awareness of our health, both mental and physical. We're wearing more devices, we're measuring our personal data from our heart rate to our steps, tracking how long we sleep. We are using so much information, looking at, you know, what we eat, what time we eat, all of these things. And many people are listening to more podcasts, reading more books, reading articles about health in order to make positive changes to their lives, to live healthier, to live happier, and to live more enriching lives. So in theory, we should all be living well and thriving in the modern world. However, we know that that is not the case. I think a decade ago, the wellbeing industry typically focused on four areas. So physical and fitness, exercise, mental and emotional health, nutrition and diet, and sleep, rest and recovery. But now it seems like there is one piece of the puzzle that has been pretty much overlooked and not taken very seriously. And that piece is stress. And I'm not talking about, you know, having a bad day or a period of intense work towards a deadline. I'm talking about relentless chronic stress that many people are experiencing as a result of living in the modern world in this fast-paced environment every single day. So today, it feels as though stress is unavoidable, and for many people is becoming unmanageable. So I am really pleased to be joined by Mo and Alice to talk about this topic today and their new book, Unstressable, a practical guide to stress-free living. Mo, Alice, welcome both of you to the podcast.
Thank you. What an incredible introduction. I wish I was such a good podcaster. That's incredible. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Well, as I say, so many things to talk to you about, and I know that this is going to be a really valuable episode for the listeners. So I think before we get into all of my questions about the book, Mo, for those that maybe don't know, you used to work in the corporate world for many years, and you worked in Google, but you've also had personal life challenges that you've written about in your previous books. Soul for Happy, as you know, one of my favorite books that I've recommended to so many people. And many people will know you for your work on happiness and your mission to help millions of people to live happier lives. So now you've co-created a book about stress. So what is it about stress, especially now in the modern world, that made you specifically want to write this book?
Alice did, actually. So I started my mission 1 Billion Happy with a focus on happiness. And as our friendship was forming back in 2020, 2021, Alice and I, we exchanged, we were on each other's podcasts, and Alice's story is so inspiring. And we became friends, and so in a lovely way, Alice is always very feminine and very soft in her approach to things. She was like, what gives you the right to write about happiness when people are so stressed? And, you know, I was like, okay. And she said, you do understand that people cannot reach happiness if they're in the negative. You have to get them to the zero line first before you can ask them to go above the zero line and become happy. And again, I said, okay, so what do you have in mind? And Alice shared her story, which I think she has the right to share, which was really, really inspiring. The story of a young lady who really had struggled with every kind of stress you can think of, like every challenge that can be thrown on a 20-year-old woman was thrown on Alice. And so it was very inspiring when you think about that. But it also highlighted to me, interestingly, that, which I, believe it or not, I did not know that, that around 24 years earlier, I lost my dad. So the first big loss in my life was my father, who died in my arms because of stress. He had a heart attack after a couple of years of depression. And, you know, basically because of what happened at work. And I loved that man so much. I mean, everyone loves their father, or most people love their father if the father is doing well. But I have to say, it killed me to see him fade away because of something that's so preventable. And so I internalized it. I never knew that this was the reason for 1 Billion Happy, my mission. But then suddenly when Alice highlighted her story, I suddenly realized, oh, we share that common goal. And so we wrote Unstressable truly not as a book. We wrote it as a mission that we've assigned ourselves to take a million people out of stress every year. If we can save a million fathers and mothers and loved ones every year, then I think that would be a very, very worthwhile effort.
Yes, I agree. And it's very interesting, actually, that all three of us are here having this conversation, because I also, in my 20s, as a young expecting mother, when I was expecting my first child, my husband at the time became very ill just one day like that for no reason. He had a spontaneous brain hemorrhage, which caused him to develop epilepsy. And at the time, all of the doctors, he survived, which was actually incredible that he survived, all said there was no cause. They couldn't find a cause. They couldn't find a reason. He's young. He's healthy. He's fit. He's well. There's no reason. Did he bump his head? Did he have an accident? No reason. But I really think actually the reason was
stress.
Yeah. It was years and years and years of stress. And I think so many of us live with stress and thinking that it's normal until something terrible like this. And then we say, there's no cause, but there's of course a cause. But yeah, so very interesting that we're all three of us here joined. And Alice, stress is of course, it's quite hard to quantify, but we're going to come on to that. And in the book, you talk about the series of events that happened throughout your 20s that led you to what you've called rock bottom. And these were external events beyond your control, which, as I say, many people will experience challenges in their life, but some people, it's immeasurable, the amount of challenges and the loss that people have to face. So you say that this book is part of your effort to ensure that chronic stress doesn't impact your life in the same way as it has for other people. So who did you have in mind when you decided or sat down to start writing this book?
Yeah, I think it was two people, actually. One was, obviously, the book is completely, for me, inspired by my dad for, losing him to stress-related illness from a burst stomach ulcer that burst and caused internal complications after him being in chronic stress for 8 years, just from all the stress that came upon us as a family. It was that person in the family who doesn't know how to deal with it and lets it completely, engross them, and it becomes a part of their identity and they can't shift it. And the other person was me. So that other person in the family who is completely affected by, the nucleus of that family having been so stressed and having chronic anxiety and stress themselves, but realizing that there has to be a different way. But it's just all about, okay, well, how do you actually find out how to do that? And I think this whole book, I always said this to Mo, I was like, it's like putting together 10 years of my own research and learnings into one thing. So it's been the most cathartic process, because when I wanted to de-stress in my 20s, following all those events, I was so stressed. I used to wake up every morning anxious to look at my phone because I'd be scared about another bad piece of news from my family. I had, physical stress, health concerns, all sorts. And I had nowhere to go to find all this information together. So I, started looking at everything online, and I used to spend hours just researching when I was, at my old job. My old bosses will be listening to these kind of things, and the book comes out, like, we're paying you to do nothing. They'd go out for lunch and I'd start researching all this stuff myself, because what we wanted to create was something that puts it all together for people, and really, it is that person who wants to make their life better, wants to not live stressfully, but equally doesn't know where to start.
And I mentioned in my introduction about, stress almost finally kind of people taking it seriously and putting some real science and evidence to what stress can do. But Mo, if you think back to when you were working in the corporate world, and, you know, would you then have described your life as stressful? I think a lot of people working in that environment, they've accepted this kind of normal, and they've normalized a high stress environment as just being part of the job. It's part of life and it's kind of expected. Do you think then you were stressed, and did you see your lifestyle as stressed back then?
You see, this is really, really the big issue. So, one of the biggest challenges we have with stress in the modern world is that we not only ignore it as, part of life. It's, you know, the price you have to pay to be successful. It's the price you have to pay to make ends meet, whatever that is. And, and not even that, we sometimes extend that into a sort of a medal of honor. It's like, look at me, I'm stressed. That basically means I'm needed, I'm useful, I am busy. Think of me as a big, successful person. And it's not, neither of those is true at all. The big premise here is that, it's not the events of life that stress you, right? It is it's the way that you deal with them that does. So we, of course, have to go through life with, challenges that come from outside us that trigger our stress response. This, stress in its biological incarnation, if you want, is a reconfiguration of the human machine to make you superhuman. It's a fantastic thing when it is applied at the time when you need it and removed from in the time when you don't. Okay, the truth is, if a tiger shows up in our caveman and woman years, a fight or flight response is the only reason we survived, right? But a fight or flight response then was one triggered by a real threat, a real event that actually warrants your stress response. And two, it lasted for as long as you managed to run away from the tiger or hit the tiger on the nose or die and be eaten, right? Either way, it took you somewhere around 7 minutes and you were stress-free. Okay, that is not what is happening to us in the modern world. In the modern world, we have lots of imaginary tigers. We have them coming at us from every side. And believe it or not, we don't reject them anymore. We're not even acknowledging their presence. We're not even aware of the effect that they have on us. And as a result, they mount and mount and mount and mount. And from one stressor to the next, we end up with cycles that last weeks or months or sometimes years of chronic stress that eventually ends up eating your useful organs from inside. Because the other, very useful, very important survival mechanism is to get into your parasympathetic state and rest and digest. Without that, you're exhausting your liver, you're exhausting your digestive, you're not using your digestive system, you're directing the blood in a way that is superhuman, but your human needs are not met. And over time, those systems start to fail. So was I stressed in my corporate years? Oh, I was horrendously stressed. I lived years on end with a headache. On end, and to the point that I stopped taking painkillers. I was like, part of life. Something's wrong with me. I don't have the time to go get it diagnosed properly. I went to a couple of doctors. They didn't know what was wrong. So let me continue. Backaches, stomach aches. I stopped working out. I became less fit, less healthy. All of the symptoms, without exception. But I was also chief business officer of Google X. So, somehow you tell yourself, look at me. I've made it. I'm successful. It's worth the price. No, it's not. It is absolutely not worth the price. And so interestingly, life will keep reminding you of that gently until it nudges you, until it tells you, no, wake up. It is absolutely not worth the price. And my call to people is, don't wait until life wakes you up. Open your eyes a little bit and start to do the things that you need so that you don't get to that corner.
Yes, because I'm thinking so many people probably are experiencing that, whether it's because of their corporate work, whether it's because of lifestyle challenges, commitments, where actually what I hear from so many people is this is a really busy time, this is a really stressful time, but next week it's going to be better, or next month it's going to, and I always laugh because I'm like, what's going to happen next Thursday? And suddenly you're going to not be stressed or have this lifestyle. It, like you said, tomorrow stays tomorrow, month after month, year after year. And Alice, I'd love to ask you, you know, if someone's listening to this now and they're thinking, yeah, actually, I'm probably pretty stressed, but they don't really, as I said, it's not like this quantifiable thing. And often people find it's hard to measure. And if things are hard to measure, that's maybe why we don't always take them so seriously. So how could someone listening to this maybe do a bit of like, almost like a lifestyle stress audit to understand right now how things are impacting them, how stressed they are, everything from the mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual, which I know you cover in detail in the book. Could you talk about these different kinds of stress? It's not just all bucketed into one, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why we wanted to create the book, because stress has been this like one topic altogether, like you say, and people haven't looked at it in the four separate parts of the self, which is what we really believe in. The easiest way to see your result for this is we've actually created a quiz on unstressable.com. So you can actually just go and do the quiz and you can see what percentage you are in each, you know, part. And I'll tell you what those stresses are as well. But it's really funny because Mo and I first, we created this quiz and we tried to do it for the first time at our retreat in the summer. And it was really funny because we're like, oh, this is really accurate, because you have a different part of you that you find the most hard to cope with the stress. Mo's is always his physical stress. And mine's always my mental. You know, I have to really try and work on that mental voice more than anything. And, you know, we were both, you know, in the green, because it goes green, amber, red. But his highest was physical and my highest was mental. So I was like, okay, well, this is definitely very accurate. But the mental stress, you know, shows up as not being able to focus, having continual, you know, negative thoughts, constantly ruminating or future tripping and worrying, really struggling with focusing with your memory and really getting swallowed into that negative thought space.
Lack of sleep as well, you know, being awakened at night with all of those incessant thoughts and so on.
Yeah, the emotional side looks at, you know, really actually struggling with so obviously the, you know, emotions that actually come from stress are things like anxiety and overwhelm, but emotional stress turns up as actual physical sensations as well. You know, it's those feelings of nausea, it's that feeling of tightness in your chest, it's that inability to actually just feel like you can be present. When you're emotionally stressed, you find it really hard to just sit still and in your body, because you're so uncomfortable in your emotions, you're constantly looking for distraction. And obviously, you know, sadness, overwhelm, irritation, snapping at loved ones for no reason. You know, it's like the straw that broke the camel's back is that one thing they asked you to do and suddenly you're exploding. Physical stress is interesting because it's the ones that are so obvious and yet we ignore them all the time. It's like Mo talking about, I had a headache for like 5 years. I mean, it's like, how is that the normal reality for people? But it is. You know, it's headaches, tension in your neck, tension in your back, digestive issues like IBS and stomach ulcers, sleep trouble, heart palpitations, increased blood rate. Then that all turns into more chronic things like, you know, type 2 diabetes, and even, you know, studies now show cancer and, you know, heart attacks. You know, chronic stress obviously is actually a killer, as I know of my wonderful dad. And then spiritual stress is actually my favorite one. So it's one that we really don't seem to understand as a society ourselves that we have. So the soul, you know, speaks to us in the language of intuition. And spiritually stressed is two sides. And so you either have one side where you're connected to your soul, you're connected to your authenticity as a human. You know, the soul self is your most authentic self, beyond labels, being able to answer who you are without answering, you know, I'm a mom or I'm a doctor, and actually who you are underneath that. When you're connected to that and you're listening to your intuition, you're not spiritually stressed. But when you're not, when you're completely disconnected from your authentic self, your soul self, we tend to get really spiritually stressed because we're out of alignment with who we are. So one side is being disconnected from that. The other side is being connected, but then you just totally ignore everything your intuition is telling you and do the opposite thing. And that causes you, you know, even more stress. So, yeah, these four parts get stressed in different ways. And so we look at how you actually learn the language that, like, your mind, heart, body and soul speaks to you in, and how you can de-stress them individually, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's brilliant to hear it broken down in that way. And actually, you know, often when I go and deliver talks and I talk about mental and physical, you know, the physiological, the mental, the emotional, and people are like, yes, yes, yes. As soon as I use that word spiritual, for example, to talk about spiritual health, people kind of, you see people kind of either they switch off, maybe they glaze over, maybe they look down. It's an uncomfortable word. And so often I'll say to people, regardless of, I'm not talking about faith necessarily, but yes, or spirituality or being barefoot, but I say to people, actually purposefulness, you know, having a feeling of, does what I do today matter and who for? If you take away, if you don't like the word spiritual, if you don't want to think of your spiritual stress or spiritual health, purposefulness, do you know, knowing, as you said, authentically why you do what you do, and yeah, as you said, who you are. I don't know if you, I'm really glad you included that. I'm not sure if you've both, you know, nodding along, if you've had that experience as well when you use that word spiritual. Some people just don't want to engage.
We had to. So when we write our, you know, when I write books in general, and when we wrote this one, we ask early readers to tell us what they think so that we write a book that's actually for the readers. And, you know, we got a lot of feedback that said, yeah, not everyone is going to align with the idea of spiritual. And we had to write a few pages at the beginning of the spiritually stressed chapter that basically spoke about the idea that one of the reasons why we reject spirituality, of course, is because some people reject what the image of religion has done, but spirituality has nothing to do with religion. You know, if you think of the scientific method as the approach that you can use to understand and comprehend what is physical, what you can observe and measure in the physical world, you know, if you believe that there is an extension of us that is the non-physical side of you, call it consciousness, don't even call it spirit, which is not physical. Love is not physical, right? And so there needs to be an approach to understand the non-physical. And that approach cannot be scientific because the scientific method insists on physical observations. It is found in, you know, in philosophy, in spirituality, and sometimes part of the religions, religious teachings. And this is where you start to contemplate. You can't really prove with science, but you start to contemplate something that is likely to be the other side of you, the other part of you that is non-physical. And believe it or not, you know, when I wrote Solve for Happy at the beginning of my career as a writer, and when we wrote Unstressable, you know, Alice really wrote most of the spiritual stress part. The idea is that there are things in your life today that are affecting you physically. You know, your commute is affecting you physically. But there are things that are not. There are things that are affecting you spiritually, your alignment with your purpose, you know, your fear of death, your connections to all, to the oneness of all of us, if you want, or to loved ones. And without tapping into that non-physical side of you, you're never going to feel that completeness of, yes, I found alignment, I found myself a place where I can be stress-free.
Yes, gosh, I've got so many new questions coming to my mind, but I'm going to move on to something else that I really, really liked. And so for people that do like, you know, talking about measurable and data, and I'm definitely, I don't know, I enjoy the data side of things. I'm often, you know, I wouldn't say skeptical, but I'm someone who always wants to see what's the evidence, what's the science, what's the research. And so I really like your approach with lots of things, Mo, when you look at things and say, how do I look at this in terms of a mathematical equation? And so in the book, you do that and you talk about that stress is essentially equal to the sum of the challenges that we face divided by our ability to accurately perceive and deal with them. So when you see it, obviously in the book, it's much clearer than maybe how I'm explaining it. But the reason I love this for lots of reasons, but I have two questions about it. So firstly, can you explain why our perception of the situation is so important? Because we know that sometimes, you know, something to us might be this idea of unstressable. We might be really stressed, worked up, overwhelmed. We know some people, we say, oh, mountain out of a molehill, or they'll say, oh, gosh, they fly off the handle. They're very reactive and stressed all the time. And other people, something, the same thing could happen, but their perception, they might go, shrug their shoulders and go, whatever. So is it a personality trait? Like, what's going on, and how important is it for us to think about our perception of the event and how that relates to stress?
So it's actually really interesting. Well, last Friday, Alice and I were going to record the pickups on the audiobook. So we had finished the audiobook, but they wanted to do a few corrections. So we were driving there. I have to say, it was a stressful day for me. The day before, my electricity got disconnected because of an error, a government, you know, a paperwork error, if you want. And then in Dubai, where I live, if you don't have electricity and water, it's a very difficult place when the temperatures are so so high. And then, you know, I had a lot of appointments that day, and, you know, it was so stressful, and I'm complaining to Alice. And Alice, again, in her very lovely, you know, very soft and feminine way, she was like, yeah, I am so stressed and life is so bad when I'm driving my comfortable car to record my book, which is hopefully going to be a bestseller. And I just fell in love a few months ago and got married to the woman of my dreams. Yeah, yeah, life is so bad. Life is very, very bad. And in a very lovely way, I think Alice was basically saying, look at the whole picture. Right. And for most of us, and you know, we struggle with what I normally call problems of privilege. You know, if you were stuck in a war zone today, unable to escape, being prosecuted by someone who is stronger than you, which sadly is the case in many, many places in the world, you wouldn't think about your commute that badly, right? You wouldn't be stressed about, you know, the fact that your boss is annoying. You'll be very, very grateful for the fact that you still have a boss and that you're still being able to provide for your family. And you know, perception is quite an interesting side of things, also on the negative side. Because, you know, when Alice speaks about beautifully, she writes in the Ton of Stress chapter, where we describe all of the different, you know, coordinates of stressors or quadrants of stressors, you know, she speaks about the stressful morning. Right, where you wake up in the morning and you get all of those little nuisances that show up in your life, from the very, very loud alarm clock to the, you know, to picking up your phone and swiping on social media or watching the news. And by 10 minutes in, you haven't even had your coffee yet, you've had 15 stressors. And that's also very interesting, because the perception of the situation for you is that I'm okay. You know, the world is stressful. I'm okay. I'm not the one that is stressing himself or herself. When in reality, it's all of those actions in sequence that are actually causing you to feel that bad. None of them are affecting you negatively in the reality of it. Like, if you didn't have access to the internet, you wouldn't worry about that child that fell in the well in Morocco. But, you know, your news network decided that this is something that can make you stuck to the TV for a longer time. So they use it to attract your attention. And so perception is very, very, very different than reality most of the time. I mean, if anyone is listening to us right now, that means that they have a digital device that enables them to connect and get access to knowledge for free, you know, and entertain themselves while they're on a hike or whatever, or a walk or a commute or whatever. And by the way, that they are fed, they are not starving. If they were starving, they wouldn't be able to listen to a podcast, and that they have a roof on top of their head. They feel safe. There is no tiger in front of them. Okay, and yet we forget all of that in the perception of the event. And normally I tell people, you know what you're forgetting? You're forgetting that by definition, if you're able to complain about all of those non-physical threats, that basically means that you're okay right now. Because if there was a tiger in front of you right now, which is a very real reason for stress, a very real threat on your life, you wouldn't be able to have the brain cycles to think about your commute. Right? The very reason that you're able to stress yourself with those thoughts is the proof that there is really nothing to be stressed about.
I like that. I really like that. Sometimes when I think about the things that, if you know that question people ask, what keeps you up at night? You know, essentially asking people, what are they stressed about? I often think that's also a signal to tell you what you care about the most. Because if you're stressed, say, for example, if I'm doing a presentation and I'm thinking about it and I want it to be, if I didn't care, if I was like, you know what, I don't really care. I don't care about the presentation. I don't care about the audience. I don't care then you're not going to be stressed. The reality is sometimes it means you care about it. You know, you want to do a good job. Or for example, if it's a relationship thing, you care about the person, you want it to resolve. That's not always a bad thing. But I love the idea that actually, if you've got the time to sit and, like you said, contemplate and almost sometimes ruminate, then actually that in itself is a little bit of a luxury that you have there. And so Alice, you know, the idea of, so that one half of it, I guess, is the perception. And then it's the ability to deal with, I think, maybe the volume of stress, but also the time. So as I'm sure when listeners read the book or listen to the book on Audible, you know, going back to your experience of having those multiple, you know, external factors, stressors, this thing, another thing, another thing. And sometimes it can feel like that in life when people go, oh my gosh, what, why me? Like another thing, another thing. And they maybe feel like actually this is too much. You know, it's too many things. It's too long. What next? As you said, what's going to happen tomorrow? And so that often, I think, is what leads people to despair, to burnout, and to feeling quite isolated, actually. So if someone is in that experience, you know, they've had things going wrong, things happening, unfortunate things again and again, later it's easier, of course, to look back. But in that moment, how can people, I suppose, deal with that stress so that it doesn't start to really erode their physical health?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I always look at this as like that two things, because we talk about in the book limiting what you can, so like limiting the needless stress in your life. And that's actually so important when you're also undergoing severe stress from the external traumas that we can't control. You know, those life altering events that we have no idea when they're happening, and they can be one after the other, like for some people, like you say. And even though you can't limit those, it's actually really important to still limit what you can to make sure that your stress threshold goes up a bit, so that you can deal with those bigger events even better at the time. So limiting the needless stress looks at actually like all these modern nuisances, we call it in the book, that are everywhere, that set off your stress response just because you're in the modern world. In the same way, like Mo said earlier, a tiger coming out of the bushes, your email from a coworker that's annoyed you sets your stress response off, as does you getting stuck in traffic, as does, you know, the news headline, as does, you know, your annoying factory setting alarm. So looking at what you can limit in that sense to bring your stress down. So, okay, am I going to, you know, have a detox for an hour off my digital devices tonight and put my phone in a drawer? That's a great limiting time to actually bring your system to sort of back into rest and digest when you're going through those emotional times. It's what I always call it as like circuit breaking. Mm. So even when you are like super stressed and you have these really big events going on in your life, it's having the awareness to just create some space within yourself to just pause and be like, okay, what can I do to circuit break my nervous system and actually tell it that it's safe? Because my mind is going to continue try to tell me otherwise and keep me in this stress state. What can I do then with my body? So, you know, like even like a stress hack I always use is something called a zebra shakedown. So literally shaking your entire body from head to toe for 3 to 5 minutes tells your nervous system, like a wild animal runs away and shakes down if they get away from the lion, tells your nervous system to calm down. So using tiny stress hacks like that we put in the book to tell your system, and then equally just starting to actually look at that piece of really understanding what thoughts are really recreating the stress from the situation. And, you know, Mo talks about this in the book. He puts in Meet Becky again, which is his most wonderful tool for meeting your brain, as you'll know from Soul for Happy. And it's actually like looking at how we are managing our mind in the stressful situation. How can you change your perspective? How can you notice what thoughts are creating even more stress from the trauma? Mm. And then also just, yeah, like I said, circuit breaking your body so that you can allow your body just a little bit of relaxation at the same time.
Mm. Yeah, I think that...
The one thing I love most about the work that we did together is that, you see, I write the equations, And Alice writes the softer, practical, you know. It was such a joy to do this together, because I would never write about a zebra shake, but it does work, right? And it's quite interesting. Our early readers, when they looked at the book, there was that yin and yang of it, you know, Unstressable is so feminine in parts of it and so masculine in other parts and so soft in other parts and so, you know, practical in other parts. And I really enjoy the fact that we could manage to do this together. And the way we did it was Alice would write a few chapters and then I would edit them, and I would write a few chapters and Alice would edit them. And I would constantly read Alice's chapters and go like, damn, I'm messing up my life really badly. the physical stress chapter was so eye-opening. I texted Alice. I was on my retreat 2022. So I take 40 days of away from the world every year, and I had to break my retreat and text Alice and say, every symptom you had in that chapter applies to me. like help.
Yeah.
You know, tell me something I can do.
No, I really enjoyed that as well. I enjoyed the kind of, it feels like a conversation between the two of you, just like right now, but it feels like that as you read the book as well. And honestly, I'm incredibly grateful. I think it's really powerful. I wish, you know, when I describe that experience that I went through 13 years ago, I didn't have any of these tools then. And I was, you know, a young person, you know, as we all kind of do our best. But I think for such a long time after, you know, going through a traumatic experience and witnessing someone seizuring, you know, things like that, so stressful for the body, obviously the fight or flight response, as you know, kicks in, you have to act. So anyone who's unfortunately had to be a first responder to emergency like that, you have to act. And so for a long, long time, I think for years, actually, my nervous system, when I went to bed, would be ready to respond. I was the first responder, even when I would get into bed. And if someone, you know, for example, if there was a noise, a cough, I would be ready. Sometimes I would jump out of bed, pick up my phone, ready to call an ambulance quickly. And then I'd look and go, oh, he just coughed, or he just, you know. And unfortunately sometimes, you know,
hyper vigilance.
And I think for such a long time, even if it's not as extreme as that kind of trauma, your body, you know, keeps a memory, as you said, it keeps you safe. And I think actually had I had some of the tools back then, like I said, I think about younger self, to go, actually, that circuit breaker that you described, Alice, breaking the habit of your nervous system and allowing your body to know you're safe, you can rest. I don't think I found that for years, you know, and I'm very grateful now. I have lots of tools and I sleep very, very well. But for years, I was hypervigilant and it's understandable, isn't it? Because sometimes people will think, if they've gone through something, they say, well, of course I'm going to be like this. I need to be, you know, it's not a made up thing. But I really, really know that, so many people will benefit from learning some of the tools in the book. And I'm conscious that I had lots and lots of questions that we won't sadly be able to go through all of them, but I do want to, I guess, ask both of you, as I've just mentioned, there are so many wonderful practical tools for, you know, healing essentially the mind, the body and the soul from stress and from trauma. Now, unfortunately, many people will say that they are too busy to do these things. You know, I know this too, because they say it to me, you know, with the work that I do. Adrienne, I know this sounds great, but I'm too busy. I'm too busy to have a power hour. I'm too busy to make time for meditation, walking every day. No, I'm too busy. And ironically, they'll say I'm too stressed. I'm too stressed and I'm too busy. So I think for both of you, Alice maybe first and then Mo, what would you say? What advice could you share to those people?
The first thing I say is, people will hate me, is if you're saying you're too busy, then you're the person who needs it most. Because, you know, we can only change what we're aware of always. And being aware of how, you know, stressed you are is such an important thing, because you have to ask yourself, you know, if you make time for what's important for you, that's what we all do. We all make time for what we think's important. You have to ask yourself, is your health important to you? Are your relationships important to you? You know, all these things that actually stress affects, you know, stress has a damaging effect on the whole circumference of our life. You know, it's not just something we can push aside. We think, oh, okay, well, you know, we kind of borrow off, you know, in the book we say this, you know, you borrow off, you know, your health and take loans on stress, because we think, oh, it's fine.
Yeah,
fine. And then eventually, well, it's not, you know, you're really chronically ill, or you've had a huge, you know, ongoing, you know, thing with your partner, because they've found that being around you, being that stressed. I remember when my mum and, you know, was with, you know, my dad and mum were together up until he died. And my mum had to go through so much stress from just having my dad in that state for 8 years. And, you know, the effect that you have as an individual on your community, on your family, on your relationships, not just yourself. So you have to ask yourself, yeah, is that community important to you? Is your health important to you? Then you're not too busy, because equally, stress hacks and stress management doesn't have to be 2 hours a day. 5 minutes a day makes a huge difference. You know, just having a labeled alarm on your phone to say, breathe, on your, you know, computer 5 times a day, and actually doing, like, you know, some long exhales, you know, extending your exhale puts you into parasympathetic state. Even that itself is something. Do you know what I mean? So it's like building and actually getting into the process of doing 5 minute hacks that start to make you feel better. And then you can build on that, because you'll want to do more and more when you realize the difference. You'll want to be out of that state more and more and not make it your normal.
I'll summarize quickly. Actually, what Alice was saying is very important, because the time will be taken anyway. You'll spend time on your stress. either dealing with it so that you're not that stressed, or dealing with its consequences, right? Of, you know, losing your partner or being rushed to a hospital. So spend the time properly. And I normally refer to what I call the Coldplay test. You know, the idea is that if Coldplay comes to your town and they're going to play a concert, you're going to find the time. You know, it's really interesting. In England, I talk about the Manchester United test. You know, if your team is playing a football game, you're going to find the time. There is time. Okay, there's always time. There is time. You know, people who tell you I'm so busy and I don't have the time, I normally ask them and I say, did you watch Game of Thrones? Because think about how many hours that was. You do have the time. It's just, do you have the will, right? Do you have the intention? Do you have the discipline that you have at work, at all of the activities that stress you? Do you have the same discipline at your self-love, at your self-compassion, at your self-care? You know, do you have the same discipline to live a long, healthy, enjoyable life? You know, and again, I was mentioning Alice talking about my recent love story, but you know, there is something that changes when someone tells you, hey, by the way, old man, I don't want you to die that soon, right? And suddenly you can make a lot of changes. You go to the gym more often, you eat differently, you know, you take care of yourself because you have now the intention. It's not the time that is the problem. It's the intention that is the problem. And I think if anyone doesn't see how much they need to manage their stress, then I don't know why, you know, what other signals they need to see in the world when stress is becoming the biggest pandemic of our time.
Yes, and also sadly, as we've discussed, sometimes you think you can put it off and you can't, you know, something will stop you, and then you're forced to take care of your illness instead of your wellness.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
That's the perfect, I suppose, segue to the Power Hour section. Now, of course, this is the Power Hour podcast, which essentially is the first hour. I call it the Power Hour. It's the first hour of your day. Now, for some people, of course, they might have a wonderful morning routine and they might do the same thing every day. For others, they might start their day with a very slow start. Some people, it's always different. And over the years on this show, I've interviewed over 300 people, business, you know, founders, Olympic athletes, reformed criminals, nutrition, lots of people, doctors. And I always ask every single guest to share with us, what do they typically include in the first hour of their day? So I guess, Mo, would you like to go first and tell us, what does the first hour of your day typically look like?
The first hour of my day is 3 hours to start. You know, since I left the corporate world, I have the luxury of writing. I love to write before I interact with the rest of the world. But my first hour is actually quite a very chill, is that the right word, ritual. So I start with stretching. I don't jump out of bed. I would simply spend a lot of time trying to visit within myself. I am a very, very, very big coffee fan. So I want to know which coffee I want today. I want to know exactly how I'm going to make it perfect. I take 15 minutes to make the perfect coffee. If it's not perfect, I will throw it away and make another one. I sit down and sip it slowly. I have a practice that I call Meet Becky. For people who don't know my original work, I call my brain Becky, so that I put that distance between myself and my brain as a third party. And Meet Becky is a practice that allows me to listen to my brain rather than, of course, meditation is very important. I do that too, but it's almost the opposite of meditation, if you want. It's becoming aware of what you're aware of. So I ask my brain to go wild and tell me all of the thoughts that it has with two simple rules. Every thought will be acknowledged and then, you know, moved away from. So I will say, okay, you know, my brain will say, remember to call Aya, my daughter. I will say, okay, I'll remember to call Aya, what else? So every thought is dismissed, if you want, not dwelled onto, and then no thought is repeated. And so basically I listen to my brain until it starts to run out of ideas and simply goes like, oh, remember to call Aya. Yeah, but you said that before, brain. Anything else? And then suddenly you get that moment of silence that is not because you're trying to force your brain to be silent, but because you actually ran out of things to think about. The funny thing is that when you then look at the list of thoughts that came into your mind, you'll probably find that 60% of them are plain stupid, 20% are actually harmful, and, you know, only very few are important. And so by taking a red pen and scratching them out, literally, like I literally say, brain, this is absolutely stupid, don't say that again. I visually remind myself that some of that crap that's running in my head doesn't work in my favor. So my morning practice includes a lot of reflection, a lot of quiet and calm time before I start writing, before I engage in the real world. And my first, you know, I know a lot of people will say we don't have that luxury. You definitely have the luxury of half an hour or an hour. So just wake up an hour earlier, sleep an hour earlier, and you'll have that in your life.
Oh, gosh, Mo, I'm so glad you said that for me. Because as you can imagine, people say to me, yeah, but Adrienne, what time do you have to get up to do this power hour? And obviously, you know, I say, well, it depends on your life, your circumstances. You know, I have a son, I have two stepchildren, we have a busy home, and, you know, it's not about perfection or, you know, whatever. But for me, I'm like, it's so important. And I've had this for years before I started this podcast, before I wrote the book, for years. And so people, you know, they know now in the house, it's like, oh, power hour, you know, don't interrupt. You know, after that, for the rest of the day, my energy, my attention, my love, my ideas, I'm for everybody else, I 100%. Can give it to them. But in that hour, it's power hour. Yeah, that's exactly. Alice, how about you? What's the first hour of your day like?
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's, I always wake up to a very soothing alarm for starters, because, you know, how you, like you talk about the power hour, it's so important, like how you set up your brain, your body, your mind, your soul, your heart for the day affects your stress threshold for the rest of the day. So if you wake up in reaction to an aggressive alarm, then you're going to react for the rest of the day and not take this time, this hour, whatever it is you can give yourself. So my hour is very important to me. And it's, I have a soothing alarm I wake up to. Then I have my hot lemon and water, usually, or a glass of water at least. I wait half an hour before I have caffeine, because, or 45 minutes, because I want my natural cortisol levels to come down, because your cortisol's naturally high when you wake up in the morning, just to get you out of bed. So I wait that long for my coffee. And in the meantime, I usually do like a mini workout, whether it's like Pilates or I go for a walk. And then I will do my journaling and like really just write all my feelings out onto paper, try and process, how am I feeling today? How do I want to feel today? And see if that's actually aligned. And if it's aligned, then I carry on with the rest. And if it's not, then I'm like, okay, what's one tiny little action I can do to make me feel better towards how I want to feel? And then I look at, you know, I meditate, but my meditations are always very, I try to connect to my soul in that meditation and look at like, okay, just connecting to that intuition. What do I need? You know, what guide me today? Kind of what that day looks for me. And then I always finish with gratitude and an intention. And I know people always think like, oh, gratitude is such a cliche thing. You know, be grateful. But it's so important, again, to like look for the things that you're grateful for. In the morning, your brain will be primed to look for more things to be grateful for throughout the day. So you'll have a better day. So I always do what I call 5x5 gratitude. So I look for 5 things to be grateful for in the outside world and 5 things to be grateful for within myself. So I think that's really important, because we so often don't look, you know, we only look outwardly, and actually it really helps boost your self-esteem, your self-confidence. So I do 5x5 gratitude, and then I finish with an intention. Okay, what do I actually want to create today? And if I'm being super organized, which I try to do, is I then actually just plan out my day. So I get it all out of my head. I mean, like, time block, okay, I'm going to do that, and that. And then I don't feel like I'm sort of flitting, and it gets more productive for the rest of the day.
Yeah, brilliant.
Don't you just love how different we are?
Well, this, yeah, exactly. This is
incredible, really. You know, she talks about what she journals what she feels, and I write about what my brain thinks.
Yeah.
She doesn't have her coffee for 45 minutes. Coffee is my first thing in my day.
Yeah,
really,
exactly.
I love the yin and yang of that.
Yeah, I love it. Exactly. As you said, it's so interesting to because the thing around it is, as I said, there's no right way. There's no, this is right.
Absolutely
it's what
not.
It's experimentation sometimes. And actually, even for me, the power hour will change, you know, it changes in different kind of seasons and things like that. But I guess I also wanted to know, you know, you mentioned then around the gratitude 5x5. I really like that idea of gratitude for external and for yourself. And I guess the question, what came to mind when you were talking was, obviously we all sometimes will have a terrible day or mood for whatever reason. We might just wake up and it might be a hormone thing. Maybe we didn't sleep well. Maybe there's something really on our mind. Maybe there's an external event, something that is, you know, we're trying to be unstressable, but we might wake up with that feeling. And actually, Mo, you might be, Becky might just be telling you bad things and stressing you out. And, you know, on those days, do you ever just give up and, oh, forget it? Or do you find that those days actually, because one thing when you mentioned that, Alice, around the gratitude out and in, I've noticed that you said about it being a cliche, but I've noticed that sometimes with me, I start to then feel guilty because I'll think, oh, Adrienne, you've got all these things to be grateful for. You've got this lovely home. You've got these lovely children. You get to write your book. You get to do this wonderful podcast today. So if you've woken up feeling bad, then you feel, you almost like berate yourself for feeling bad and you feel worse. I feel guilt. I'm like, now I'm guilty because I should be grateful.
Yeah.
So yeah, do you have any advice for people on those days?
To start with, remember, stress is a survival mechanism. If you don't have those feelings, there's something wrong. You're missing out on important signals, right? It's not the external events that stress you. It's the way you deal with them. So you should never, never blame yourself for feeling that way. This is basically very healthy. You're saying to yourself, something is not at its optimum level. Okay? Something needs to change. Something needs my attention, if you want. Right? Beautiful. That statement in itself is a wonderful statement. It means you're aware. It means you're in connection with your body, with your feelings, with, you know, you're really getting the signal. Once you get that, acknowledge it, write it down, ask yourself exactly what is stressing me. You know, he doesn't love me anymore. No, that's not the statement. What is stressing me? He said some comment yesterday that was hurtful. Interesting. Was the comment hurtful or did it trigger something from your past? Right? And really look at what is going on, because your body, your emotions, your mind are just giving you a signal. They're saying something needs your attention. Pay the attention, handle it the right way, and the stress will go away.
Great. Thank you. Alice, anything to add?
Yeah, I always look at it in a slightly different way.
As we would expect.
But I always take there's a principle, like when you do Reiki and your Reiki masters, there's a principle they call just for today. And I always look at it as, okay, how can I allow myself to be gracefully human just for today? Because we are all human. Like you say, you can find that guilt of being like, I've got all this, I'm so grateful and blah, 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 but I'm so stressed and I'm so annoyed today. And so it's like, okay, just for today, what can I do to make myself feel better? Just for today, can I allow myself the grace to just realize that I'm human and I'm not perfect? And then I actually always then flip to the other side of being like, okay, well, as much as we are human, where, you know, I believe we're all spiritual beings having a human experience. And so a question we actually put in the book is, you know, what would my soul do? That simple question, like, creates space between you and your crazy human side and your ego going around in these swirling stress thoughts and just asking yourself, taking a deep breath, what would my soul do? Because your soul is not, you know, stressed, it's calm, it's not judgmental, it's not overwhelmed, it's not angry. And so asking you to look at the language that side of you speaks, you know, in kindness and, you know, lack of judgment and just, you know, calm and ease, and just ask yourself that question, I always find helps create space between the sort of turmoil we create from the stress side on those days.
Well, I feel great. I feel unstressable. I feel calm. I feel uplifted. And I feel incredibly grateful that both of you were able to join me today to share your time, your knowledge, your authentic truth with me and also the guests on the show. So thank you both so, so much for joining me.
It's such an honor. Thank you for having us and for such a lovely conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been so lovely.
As always, I will be back next week. But if you have enjoyed this episode with Mo and with Alice, then please do share it with others. And of course, the book Unstressable is out. What's the date, release date?
End of April in the in North America, May 9th in Britain, and International English.
Great. So it is out May 9th in the UK, end of April. Check it out. I'm sure you'll be able to get it everywhere that you buy books, yeah, and also on Audible as well.
Absolutely. And if people pre-order, they are welcome to come and join our pre-order webinar. So you will have a 2 hours conversation with hundreds, thousands of people probably. But basically to explain all the concepts and have questions and a nice conversation. So if you pre-order, take your pre-order receipt to unstressable.com and register for the webinar.
Run, don't walk. Run, don't walk. Thank you so much. And I'll be back next week with another episode. See you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.